Hello, everyone, and welcome to Eat Life News, a show dedicated to bringing you all the latest headlines, scoops, and narratives going on in the crazy world of Ethereum. I'm your host, Dennis Omer. We're joined by my co-host, DeFi Dude, and Liz from Brighton. Ethereum celebrated its sixth birthday last week, and happy birthday to Ethereum. And what an incredible 6 years it's been. It's come just so far over these last 6 years. I remember how it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And the growth has just been phenomenal. It is by far the largest smart contract platform in existence right now, with the most number of developers, the most number of dApps, most users, most value captured than probably all of the smart contract platforms combined. And there was a really cool tweet thread from Spencer Noon going over some of the statistics. And we're on track to hit 50 million smart contracts deployed over the last 6 years at this rate by the end of the year. And we will have done over 500 million transactions just in this year alone. And there's already 30 million active addresses. And that's an all-time high. And it's just incredible to see like just how much activity is going on. And you know, so I first came across Ethereum in early 2016 when I had no idea about crypto. I'd never really looked into Bitcoin. And I came across a Reddit Explain Like I'm 5 post titled, "What is Ethereum?" And that's when I was first exposed to this idea of this Turing complete distributed computer where anyone could deploy any contract they wanted. And since then, it's been the classic rabbit hole. You know, it's been the primary focus of my life. It's been pretty much life changing. And for many people who kind of discover Ethereum, I've experienced this almost the same thing. You know, and you also get to meet so many awesome people as well. And that adds so much to that journey. So happy birthday to Ethereum. Happy sixth birthday. DeFi Dude, how has your Ethereum journey been so far? How did you get into it?
Yeah, so far it's been absolutely awesome. So I first heard about Ethereum, I guess, very early 2017. I think it was like Microsoft joining the EEA or something like that. And my buddy was telling me about it, and that like really, you know, piqued my interest. I was like, okay, this is, you know, Microsoft getting into it, some other big name. So I thought like this must be a real deal. Prior to this, I was in Bitcoin just very lightly, very familiar with it, thought the tech was cool. Like I always kind of been a nerd. So needless to say, 2017, I just was like, okay, this is serious, put so much time in just like reading about it and joining the Reddit communities and like seeing what other people have to say and like basically gathering all the information I can as like a passive lurker, you know, not a developer. Never thought I could really produce much. So I was just kind of like absorbing all the information. And then later that year, you know, things got a little crazy, ICO stuff, all that kind of stuff. And I was a big fan of Kyber early on and like was posting in their Reddit. That's actually where I met Dennis, and I got pushed into the Telegram chat. And from there, it's like I realized, okay, the community in Ethereum, whether, you know, at that point it was for Kyber specifically, but just the community around Ethereum and projects. It's just like I haven't really seen anything like it, except maybe in like video games, which I was a big gamer. So like seeing communities like this online, it's like just thriving. I already knew like there's awesome tech behind it. The community's great. I'm sold. So just ever since then, yeah, I've been putting in as much time as I can learning, trying to, you know, help out where I can and just be a part of the greater community of Ethereum, which is, you know, growing by the day. And it's been just an awesome journey ever since.
So. And I guess testament to that growth is just how mainstream it has become. Last week, he was saying how normal it is for Reddit to be using like a layer 2 Ethereum solution, you know, for its community point system, where every week there's some high profile kind of platform or company using NFTs, right? And we have a few this week as well. And, you know, you go on Bloomberg, you go on Reuters, it's completely normal to have coverage of Ethereum in these large media outlets, right? And I think the best example was actually this week. So we're still on track for the London Hard Fork to go live on Wednesday the 4th, so in a few days' time. And, you know, just to summarize, it's this huge protocol upgrade, which is going to introduce many improvements, including the famous EIP-1559. And that kind of, that changes the way the transactions are processed, and it makes for a clearer gas pricing scheme. And I mean, that was covered in a comprehensive Reuters article yesterday, for example, on EIP-1559. Like, just explains what it is at a high level, what it means for the Ether supply, how it might impact Ether's price, and what it means for investors. And, you know, just doing a normal Google news article search for EIP-1559 brings like 15,000 articles. You know, okay, granted, many are duplicates, but it also goes to show you just how much progress Ethereum has made on the way to that mainstream adoption. Yep, we're still like in the first ladder out of 10 maybe, but we're well on our way. Aside from Ethereum, this week we also had some pretty big news out of the US, right? From your side of the world that impacts not just Ethereum, but crypto as a whole. So what's happening there?
Yeah, definitely impacts crypto as a whole. So basically there's a new provision that was added to like a huge US infrastructure bill. And it kind of expands the definition of a broker, which includes like nearly everyone in crypto, including like non-custodial actors such as miners, DEXs, you know, a bunch of DeFi stuff, basically forces them to KYC their users. So, you know, all crypto services, including like stakers and miners, they would have to collect customer data, including like name, address, phone number, you know, all that kind of stuff, and report it to the IRS. So that right there, I mean, just to think like, how could a miner collect that data? It's something that they quite literally couldn't. So it's just like, goes to show how absurd this is. But you know, other than just the miners, all the other services that could still collect things like that basically leads to mass surveillance if, you know, the bill passes as it is. So it's just, you know, kind of a huge setback for our space. Obviously, you know, it doesn't revolve around the US, but there's a big impact with US regulation and things like crypto markets. So a lot of experts, they're calling it like misguided, you know, saying it will definitely do more harm than good for the US. And yeah, I think a lot of people are seeing that as well. Jake Chervinsky, he's a general counsel at Compound. He's been kind of vocal on Twitter about this. He said it defies logic to adopt a regulation for which compliance is literally impossible unless the goal is to kill the industry, which kind of makes sense. I mean, like, you know, it's almost literally impossible when you think like miners, stakers and that stuff. It's like, you know, just doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, second, it's a huge foreign policy failure. China made the mistake of forcing miners out of their country. A bunch of people were hoping the U.S. would kind of take that market share. But, you know, now the U.S. is kind of making the same mistake, it seems. So for every new dollar of tax revenue, we're basically, you know, we could lose 2 or even like 10 as the U.S. crypto industry shuts down or goes offshore. So the IRS is going to get less info as users go dark, you know, on unregulated platforms and things like that where it won't be so obvious that they're transacting on. And, you know, basically the burden it places on civil rights, it's just very bad, unacceptable almost. If you're big into crypto, Jake, as well as many others, you know, they're basically urging you to call your member of Congress, see, you know, check out your area. There's ways to do it online. See who represents you, give them a call, let them know how you feel about this and just, yeah, talk with them. I mean, it can't hurt really at this point. So
if there's any time to be reaching out to politicians, now is the time. Now is the time to be getting in touch with your representatives and saying this thing is completely, completely misguided. It doesn't achieve any of its targets and you're killing off a whole industry. And this industry is a completely valid. I mean, how can you kind of put limits on this permissionless, decentralized kind of movement and right now just pigeonhole it into your classic, conventional kind of system, which doesn't work in itself, right? And this, the only reason the crypto thing is in this bill, in this infrastructure bill, right, is to get it to pay for the infrastructure bill. I mean, that's not even being debated. So yeah, we hope it doesn't really go through. It's kind of scary at what pace it's being pushed through, and we're going to keep an eye out on that. Now, going back to, let's say, controversy in the DeFi world, last week, the team behind Uniswap, so Uniswap Labs, announced that they had started restricting access to a small number of tokens on the Uniswap interface, so on app.uniswap.org. And that's basically the front-end interface, which is maintained by the Uniswap Labs team, and that kind of pulls in and does the trading and the swapping from the smart contracts. So the restricted tokens seem to include a lot of synthetic tokens. So that means synthetics type tokens, UMA tokens, Opine tokens. And many of these can't be traded. I think there was over 130 different tokens which have been kind of let's say, banned from the front end. But okay, we should still note that these tokens can still be traded on the Uniswap smart contracts, but that didn't stop the huge barrage of criticism towards the Uniswap team. Like, people are saying, what are you guys trying to do? We thought this was a decentralized movement. And personally, I think it's important to make the distinction between the Uniswap smart contracts, which no one can censor and where you can trade whatever you want, and the Uniswap Labs team have no influence over. And, you know, kind of differentiate that with Uniswap, the front end, which is still being hosted somewhere and is bound by laws and regulations, just like any other Web2 platform. So I personally don't have any issue with the Uniswap Labs team taking this action. I believe it was done out of necessity. It's not something they would have wanted to do. There must be very good regulatory reasons for that. And since there are alternative UIs, traders can still trade any token they wish. So it's good to kind of familiarize yourselves with alternatives. DeFi, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same as, I mean, what you laid out there, basically. A lot of people were kind of upset and stuff. And like, if you really think about it, though, at the end of the day, it does make sense. This is a company. They're bound by certain regulations. They're not just going to block 30 tokens or whatever it was just for the fun of it. You know, there's obviously being, you know, some regulatory pressure. And like you said, it's the front end, right? These are smart contracts. This isn't at the contract level, you know, and it is important to familiarize yourself with trading on like various UIs and stuff. If, you know, you find this an issue, that's what smart contracts are there for. You know, definitely many places you can access Uniswap, but beyond there, just main UI and front end.
On a separate note, all this unbound, limitless innovation where there's thousands and thousands of experiments happening at the same time also is leading to increasing the accessibility of crypto and Ethereum to the general public. And one of the examples I like to use is how people ask me, oh, what should I invest in? And usually you want to keep it simple. Ethereum, Bitcoin, like maybe top DeFi projects. And that's why indexes that you set protocol in the back end are so popular, right? They have like Ethereum leveraged indexes, and they have different kind of indexes. And I think now they've just launched maybe one of the most useful indexes for newcomers. So they've launched a BED index in cooperation with the Bankless DAO. And this BED index is made up a third of Bitcoin, a third of Ether, and a third of the DPI, which within the DPI, you also have Uni, Aave, Maker, Compound. So with one single token, the BED token, you're getting exposure to Bitcoin and Ethereum and DeFi, which I think for many people is the most perfect diversification level, right? Everyone like who's sensible is saying, have a bit of Bitcoin, have a bit of ETH, and maybe exposure to a few other ones. Me personally, I'm mostly ETH, but I can easily suggest, you know, the BED index to anyone who's just coming into crypto. Just get that, just hold it in your wallet, and it's like holding wrapped Bitcoin and wrapped ETH and all those other tokens. So that's incredibly useful. I also saw there was some proposal for some other index, right, from the Index Co-op board.
Yeah, there was a proposal to create a new Polygon 10 index, otherwise known as P10, basically a showcase of the 10 top performing projects built on Polygon based on weighted market cap. So the idea is to give holders exposure, you know, to the native Polygon protocols. And first group of products is going to be QuickSwap, Avagachi, Cometh, Telcoin, SportX, and a few others. And so looking at the comments, there seemed to be a strong support for this, for the creation, I guess, of this index. So definitely one to keep an eye out on. You know, we've talked about Polygon many times on here. We've seen that there's lots of growth coming to Polygon. So not surprising to see a push for this index, that's for sure. So then a few weeks ago, we also mentioned that as time goes by, more and more centralized exchanges are going to allow, you know, withdrawals of funds to sidechains directly and layer twos. And this week, we got news that Binance has integrated with Polygon. So now Matic tokens can be deposited or withdrawn straight to Polygon without having to go through Ethereum first, which, I mean, that is just a great thing to have. It saves money for the end user and time. And a side note, Sandeep, one of the founders of Polygon, tweeted that last weekend they had finalized one of the biggest game changers for Polygon. So he mentions this would be more profound than Matic's expansion to Polygon and will set Polygon's tech to provide extremely scalable layer 2.
So I guess it must be actual layer 2 rather than there is sidechain technology right now, right? So maybe it's rollups, or I don't know what they have in mind, but it's cool to see them kind of branch out into this space as well. And, you know, it's becoming competitive. We have Arbitrum, we have Optimism. There's so many different legitimate contenders. And let's see how the whole layer two thing plays out. Now, we also know that Polygon has a huge, huge treasure chest, right, to build out their ecosystem. So maybe we shouldn't be surprised that they announced this week the creation of Polygon Studios, which is a brand new $100 million fund to support all the blockchain game developers and NFT creators who want to come to Polygon. They tweeted out this thread where they mentioned that this fund is, well, it's basically aiming to serve as a bridge between the Web 2 world and the Web 3 world. They're trying to bring in people from the Web 2 world to come and build games on Polygon. And I was surprised that they mentioned that there's already 100,000 blockchain gamers on Polygon, which is super impressive. And they want this Polygon Studios to serve as the home for the top builders, the creators, the artists, and people who want to innovate within the NFT space. And they said they also want, they're aiming to make this the go-to platform for intellectual property owners and also for large Web2 franchises looking to venture into the Web3 stuff. They said as part of this fund, they'll also be providing building and launch support. They'll be facilitating launch of big brands and franchises on Polygon. They're going to be introducing play-to-earn opportunities for gamers. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty exciting to have this kind of pot of money to be distributed to bring in even more developers and gamers into the, let's say, Ethereum ecosystem, into the layer two space, into sidechains. And I think we're going to be reaping the benefits of such large funds for years to come. For NFTs, I've seen the chatter on Twitter kind of increase a notch as well, right? There seems to be a lot of activity. I think right now maybe two-thirds of my Twitter feed has become about NFTs. It's pretty cool to see just how much is going on. So what's happening in the world of NFTs this week?
Yep, as every week, so much going on. I totally agree with you on the NFT flooding the Twitter feed. Have seen a few people actually mention that too, so definitely not alone there. But this week, speaking of big brands, as always, it seems, you know, have a new big brand or five jumping on NFTs. So this week we've got Coca-Cola. They have teamed up with Taffy. It's a known avatar developer for like various games and metaverse type things. So they've launched a branded wearables as NFTs, including a wearable bubble jacket for Decentraland. Kind of like the 3D metaverse game you could walk around in. So they're going to be auctioned off, all these Coca-Cola wearables, unlike, you know, previous drops, such as I think we saw like Atari came in and like you could claim it for free, but only a certain window. But all proceeds of these auctions are going to be going towards the Special Olympics. So it's cool to see they're not just auctioning these off to, you know, line their pockets, but instead it's actually going to be going to a good cause. So that's cool to see. And you know, to see Coca-Cola releasing NFTs, like to me, I see Coca-Cola as like one of the OGs when it comes to like IP and like branding, like similar to like Disney and things like that. So seeing, you know, official Coca-Cola branded NFT is just super cool. I mean, at this point, I can't even say it's surprising just because of, you know, the way we've seen NFTs evolving. But yeah, really cool to see.
How much do you think the jacket is going to go for?
I don't know. I don't even want to put a guess on it at this point.
But I mean, I'm really bad at guessing because to me, it always seems like how much can it be, right? I'm thinking tens of thousands. Do you think it will reach that much?
I could see, yeah, maybe 50 grand, 50,000. I could see give or take, but that's just a wild random prediction. So I'm not
okay.
Sure.
But yeah, we'll keep you guys updated. That's this week, right?
Yeah, I think so. Coming up soon. Okay. So. In other NFT news, we do have Gary V. He actually on Friday purchased an Ape Punk, CryptoPunk, for 2,250 Ethereum or Ether, otherwise $5.5 million roughly. Definitely sparked some more talks about CryptoPunks. I mean, it never really kind of went away, but definitely kind of heated things up a little bit. Over the past few weeks, speaking of like Ape CryptoPunks in general, we've seen some pretty high bids on them, you know, alongside the one that Gary himself bought. So I guess kind of expected given the rarity of the apes themselves. You know, you've got like apes and aliens and different types of punks, which are more rare. But it's just crazy to think about how like this purchase is somewhat normal, I guess, in NFT and CryptoPunks now, Whereas, like, not even 1 year ago, if this happened, people would be losing their mind. Like, I remember when Gary Vee was just getting into NFTs, people were like, oh my gosh, Gary Vee's into NFTs or getting into NFTs. That's crazy. And it's like, now he's buying $5.5 million punks. So, just crazy.
I mean, that's still like, I'm still like wrapping my head around that. Like, that just sounds so high. I mean, we're talking about $5.5 million for one ape punk, right? So what does he say? Like, did he have any commentary on his purchase? Why he did it? Like, what was his motivation?
No, not really. He just kind of made a small joke about it, but he didn't really give any purpose or reason. Yeah, so. But we do have more news for CryptoPunks, actually. There's another kind of big ticket thing. So last night, a single anonymous buyer purchased 88 CryptoPunks all in a single block. So I think it was like 88 of the floor punks, you know, the cheapest punks you can get, which is still not super cheap. But they were sold in total for $5.5 million. Again, same as, you know, the one punk that Gary bought. But what is really interesting is that this buyer, they actually bribed MiningDAO 5 ETH to be able to execute this in a single block, just to avoid tipping anyone off about their purchase. So if they tried to buy 88 CryptoPunks without MiningDAO, they probably could have only done I don't know an exact number. Maybe they could have bought 20 and then they have to wait another block and buy 20. And then people would catch on and, you know, they didn't want to tip anyone off. So they ended up bribing them. It worked. And they were able to do it in a matter of like a minute or two in one block. So it, of course, sent punks into kind of a frenzy, raised the floor or, you know, the bottom, the cheapest ETH per punk floor by another few ETH per punk. So there's also a lot of theories of like who it is or like what type of person this anonymous buyer is. Some saying it could even be money laundering or manipulation. But some of the more reasonable guesses is like, it could just be a fund purchasing these. Even I personally wouldn't be surprised if it was just Gary Vee tripling down on punks, you know, after his ape purchase, who knows? But we may never know. So,
yeah. Although out of the three, I have a feeling it's a bit more likely to be like a fund, because we've seen that before as well, right? There's like collections now. There's people that are getting together and syndicating and buying like artwork, and you can also even fractionalize it as well, right? That's something we have to look into. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a lot of options there. And last in NFT news that we could at least cover in a reasonable amount of time is to do with Stoner Cats. So we actually discussed it last week, just about the sale and how like it was a success. They sold out, but then at the same time they had the failed transaction fee issue, leading to like over $700,000 in ETH lost. But we do have some positive news in regards to that. So Ashton Kutcher has come forward on Twitter stating that they will be refunding or gifting, in his words, the lost ETH back to those who had failed transactions. So, you know, personally, I think this is the right move, just because there are steps that could have been taken to avoid the failures that weren't. They do say that they followed the industry standard, but hearing people talk about it, hearing, you know, how exactly it went down, it seems that like the industry standard is to overestimate the amount of gas to be used in total, just even by 10%, say, and then any that isn't used just gets kicked back to the user. The only downfall of this is when you first initialize that transaction, it's going to reference a price or gas price amount that's just slightly higher. You know, it might be $12 instead of $11 or $10. So, but you're not going to be losing more gas by doing that. And it would have saved a lot of failed transactions. So it is cool to see. There's a lot of upset people who will hopefully be made right. So everyone walks away happy. So that will be good.
Yeah. Did you watch the Stoner Cats episode, the first release?
Yeah, I did. 6 minutes.
How was it?
Yeah, it was okay. You know, it was a little funny, quirky, I guess. And I don't mean to be too critical, but it is their pilot. But like, there was some things too. It's like Chris Rock. Like, it seemed like he just recorded his thing off of his laptop microphone and like things like that. Oh. So it's like, I think, but, you know, people did mention it, you know, they raised it, the issues, and, you know, obviously made themselves heard. So we'll see if there's improvements there.
Would you watch it again?
Yeah, I mean, 6 minutes. I probably should watch it again at least once anyway. But
no, I mean, like the like upcoming episodes.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course.
It was in my to-do list, and you know, if it was going to be terrible, I thought I'd rather not waste my time. But I think from what you're saying is like, yeah, it is worth watching.
Yeah, at 6 minutes, definitely worth watching.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And to close off this week's episode, well, the most important thing that's probably happening since we started this podcast is the London network upgrade. And that's happening on Wednesday during block 12,965,000, which is meaningless. Or it might be on Thursday, August 5th, depending on your time zone. So for me, it's like just after 1 p.m. And to celebrate this Ethereum network upgrade, the ETH Staker crew, who do this every time there's a hard fork, they're going to be hosting a live stream party that starts 45 minutes before that block. And they have a lot of great things planned out, and it's going to be fun, and it's going to be packed with lots of entertainment. There's a pop-up app that can be received from it. I'm not too sure with the details. DeFi, like, what is the pop-up part of this?
Yeah, so there's actually two pop-ups this time. If you don't know, pop-ups, just an NFT, kind of represents your, you know, being there or attending something, many things. So you'll get a pop-up for going or watching the live stream, but then that pop-up as well is basically your key to this pop-up.art canvas. So while we're all sitting around watching the live stream, waiting for the network to upgrade, there's going to be this canvas where you can place 1 pixel per second as long as you have the PoOP. And then it's just a whole collaborative movement for everyone in the community to drop pixels and create this, you know, beautiful artwork thing. And I also hear that you can get another PoOP for placing a pixel. So yeah, two PoOPs if you participate as
well. We had something similar on the Beacon Chain launch last December, right? Or because this concept sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, many parties, and I think I don't know about Beacon Chain launch if PoOP art was ready, but I do know what the last upgrade, whatever it was, I believe there was a PoOP art canvas.
Okay, and if users want to receive the PoOP NFT, what do they have to do? Do they just have to go on the Discord server?
Yeah, so you're going to need to be in the Discord probably to claim the link, but they've been doing things a little different. So I think even outside of the Discord, as long as you're watching the stream, you'll be able to claim that PoOP. And then if you participate in the art canvas by placing at least 1 pixel, you should automatically be able to get that second PoOP NFT if that's what you want.
Yeah, well, there you have it, everyone. This is history in the making, but also go home, make sure you grab that NFT, that PoOP NFT as well, and try and add your pixel as well. We hope everything goes well with the London hard fork. There was a tiny bit of a bump in the road last week when there was that tiny client bug found and it was fixed. But we're all really, really looking forward to it. We all trust all the developers that have worked on it. And, you know, we want to thank them for all their hard work and for everyone who's kind of pushed us and everyone who supported it. So let's see what happens. By next episode, we'll be giving you an update of how awesome it was and how we've started burning ETH. Of course, even that's with a caveat, right? Me saying that is kind of controversial because it's not guaranteed to burn ETH. I think the quay has to be over a certain amount and certain conditions, and then the burn starts. But in any case, we're all looking forward to that. We're all really excited. So until next time, keep your eyes peeled on that, and we'll catch you next week. See you.
See you, guys.
This podcast is supported by the awesome team at Kyber Network. For more information and to find out how Kyber Network provides liquidity to over 100 different dApps, wallets, and exchanges, check out kyber.network.